Hi, I'm Anthony Brabazon, and this is the God Talk program for the next half hour on 90.3 Near FM, where we'll be grappling with the big questions of life from a biblical perspective. And today, greetings go out to Paul Caffrey in the Dolomites. That's the mountains of Italy, I gather. And he's always up a mountain, Paul is. And Kenny and Lynn Gillies from Kirriemore, which is north of Dundee. Hi to you, Kenny. And Joe and Lorraine Kerrigan, good old friends of ours, met you earlier today. Ron Mullins, Mick O'Brien, of course, who does that stalwart programme on a Sunday morning. And he actually told me this week, stay in the bed. So I took his wise instruction on that point. Also, hi to you, Spencer and Caroline, and also to Dave Robinson. And finally, to Billy Jago. I'll be over later for that cup of tea, Billy, and the bag of crisps, of course. So, also, thanks to our backroom staff here in Near FM, without whom you would be listening to silence. And that's to Gary and to Paul. Hi to you guys. And today, our text line, as always, it's a 24/7 text, and it's 087-979-5454. And we have a special guest today, Lisanne.
Hello.
Very welcome to the Studio One here in Near FM. And Lisanne now is, I have to warn you about this one, because she is an avid book reader. And I think that goes back to your childhood, Lisanne.
Yes, I can never remember when I learned to read. I just always could read. So way back to before I remember.
You were a born reader, as they say. Yeah. And I even heard a story about some nuns knocking on the door of your parents' house.
Yes, when I was about four, so my mum with eight other children answered the door, and the nun said, your daughter has a problem, can we speak to you? So in they came anyway, and my mum said, what's the problem?
Must
and
they been worried, yeah.
Yeah, they said, she doesn't say anything, she just won't speak anything. And I was as quiet as a mouse, but I was always a reader. Another nun then complained to me that I read too much and suggested I should go home and read half a book, Enid Blyton or something, and half the next day, which I thought was the most ridiculous suggestion. You only read it to find out what happened, and why wait till tomorrow?
So. Yeah, well, you're talking to someone who takes about a year to read a book, you know, so I can identify with what they said. But yeah, well, with all your avid book reading, we're actually doing, on this programme, we're doing a book, not only a book review, but I think we're doing a few book reviews together. And these are like your desert island books. Like if you were stuck on a desert island and you could only take a few books with you.
I hasten to add, you don't need to be on a desert island. But this is just like a little selection of some of my favourites. And they're all just so encouraging, uplifting and wonderful.
Well, I see the selection in front of me here, and they actually cover different, quite a wide span of eras and centuries. And, yeah. And the first one is The Life and Times of George Whitefield by Robert Philip. Now, do you want to explain to the listeners, first of all, of someone who's never heard the name George Whitefield, who is he?
Well, this actual book I would be recommending for people who were Christians and who liked to read, because this is, like, there are big books and small books here, but this is a bit of a tome. And also, this actual book was published in 1837.
So that's the type of book Paul Caffrey would read.
Exactly. Yes, I did recommend it to Paul. But this book was written about the life of a guy, George Whitefield. Now, George Whitefield, he was a good friend of John Wesley, who everybody has heard because of the Methodist movement. Mm-hmm. And there are Methodists in the world, in Ireland and everything to
that's
this
right,
day.
Yeah.
But George Whitefield met him at Oxford, and they were very good friends, apart from a bit of a fallout at some stage in their lives, but they were very good friends. But when George Whitefield died, 2 years after he died, a guy wrote a short biography. But this book, and there are plenty of other books written about George Whitefield, because he was an astonishing Christian and he was an astonishing preacher. And but this guy Robert Philip wrote the book. He spoke to people who would have, you know, maybe 20 years after Whitefield died, he would have, you know, known people then who would have known Whitefield. So
and George Whitefield, he used to get huge crowds, didn't he, at his outdoor gatherings.
He used, yeah,
and a lot of there was PAs or any amplification.
Well, a lot of the books written about George Whitefield's life concentrate on the size of the crowds, the amazingness of like the highs. And but yeah. this book, the reason I would recommend this book by Robert Philip, it's not the easiest read because it is like it's quite old fashioned language. And but Robert Philip, the author, he based this on Whitfield's journals, his letters, his sermons, and his whole idea was to leave his subject to speak for himself. He wanted yeah. Whitfield to come through on the pages. Yeah. And that's exactly what does happen. Mm. An interesting thing about this book is it was published in 1837, as I said, mm. and another famous Christian, George Mueller, was going on a bit of a sabbatical, and he took this newly published book with him, George Whitfield's life, and he was very impressed. Now, when George Mueller is impressed, that's what got me reading this biography, because George Mueller was very impressed because Whitfield used to read the Bible when he was on his knees, which is, I'm not saying you have to do that or anything, but it just impressed George Mueller.
He took it as the word of God, you know, not just a book. Yeah,
yeah. But it's a really good book because through it you see it's not just the sensational that comes across. What it is the man Whitfield comes across, and he's a kind of a Christian who you just don't really meet the like of today. I'll just give you, in the introduction to this book, this is now a modern version. No, it's the same book, but it was just republished. And Ian Murray, who people would know as a very famous modern person, he wrote an introduction to it, the republished book. Mm-hmm. And he said this is what Ian Murray said: "For those who want a quiet work of scholarship, Philip is not their man. But where the desire is for the evangelical flame, for words that burn and preach heart and soul, this is a volume that shows why the gospel can turn the world upside down." And that's, it shows Whitfield, his heart, and he was astonishing. And just to give you a little flavour, if I just read out one passage. Now, it's a book of...
You're a bait of breath waiting for this.
Yeah, this is wonderful, really. And like Banner of Truth Press republished this book a short while ago. But so I'll just read. This is to give you a flavour of Whitfield the man. This is his own writing. "In this retirement, his communion with God was at once intimate and habitual. Could the trees of the wood speak, he says, they would tell what sweet communion he and his Christian brethren had, under their shade, enjoyed with their God. Sometimes, as I have been walking," he continues, "my soul would make such sallies that I thought it would go out of the body. At other times I would be so overpowered with a sense of God's infinite majesty that I would be constrained to throw myself prostrate on the ground and offer my soul as a blank in his hands to write on what he pleased. Mm-hmm. One night was a time never to be forgotten. It happened to lighten exceedingly," that's like thunder and lightning. "I had been expounding to many people, and some being afraid to go home, I thought it my duty to accompany them and improve the occasion to stir them up to prepare for the coming of the Son of Man. In my return to the parsonage, whilst others were rising from their beds and frightened almost to death to see the lightning run upon the ground, I and another, a poor but pious countryman, were in the field, praising, praying to, and exulting in our God, and longing for that time when Jesus shall be revealed from heaven in flaming fire. Oh, that my soul may be like a frame, in like frame, when he shall actually come to call me." And that's like a little flavour of what he was
words
like.
Words that burn, yeah.
Yes, he was not a quiet man.
No, and... you know, the thing I've found about George Whitefield, the bit I've read about him, you know, is his singular power. It was like he did business with God himself to a point where he would speak directly in his preaching of the gospel. A lot of people in their ministry and preaching of the gospel, they talk about us and we being sinners, but he went direct and he said, "You're a sinner," you know, and to his life stood up. He had the character in his life to be able to represent Jesus in that way and to point people to the cross. So there's very few today, I think, who are able to do that in a position.
Well, I think just to sort of explain is that there's a lot of people, it's easy to say you're a sinner. I mean, we're all sinners, and sometimes preachers say, you're a sinner. Whitfield was different. Whitfield said, a quotation which I love about Whitfield. Whitfield said to sinners, he knew that he was the greatest, one of the greatest sinners himself. And he used to say to them, you can't even feel your sin, and you can't even cry over your sin. But if you won't cry over your sin, he said, George Whitfield will cry over your sin. And he'd throw his head back in the preaching and he'd weep. And people knew that he loved them. He loved them because God loved them. Mm. So I couldn't say about George Whitfield that he said, you're a sinner. George Whitfield went from his master who'd saved him to say, come, be saved.
Yeah,
that was what he was like. But
yeah, that's quite remarkable. And now a message come in, says, listening in from Val de Fossa in the Dolomites, and I'm dying to hear the rest of Lizanne's Desert Island Lit. That's from our correspondent up the mountains, Hi Paul. And so we get straight back to it, Lizanne. The next book's Our Nearest Kinsman by Roy Hessian.
Yes.
What's this one about?
Well, we're going from a big tome, a big read, right down to a very small little book.
That's my style.
In actual fact, this book has approximately 100 pages, and it's a little more modern book written by a guy called Roy Hessian. Now, Roy Hessian was British and he died in 1992. Hmm. He was a guy who worked in Barings Bank, which means he was very normal. And
while I was there.
Yeah. And then he went into full-time Christian work as an evangelist, especially to young people. And I suppose the theme of this book is, what hope is there when things go wrong?
Right.
It's a little book based on the Bible book of Ruth. The book of Ruth in the Bible is only four chapters
long.
It's
another short book, yeah.
Yeah, and this is based on this. And actually, if you didn't know anything about the Book of Ruth, he explains it very well. And actually, the Book of Ruth is reprinted in this little book. So, if I just read you out a little scrap to give you a little flavour. This is from his introduction, right? And he says, redemption is that activity of the grace of God that not only forgives a man's sins, but also restores and overrules all the loss occasioned by his sin. And what loss we have subjected ourselves to because of our folly, sin and pride. We lose our experience of blessedness. Where's the blessedness I knew when I first saw the Lord? We lose our happy relationships with others, in the home, in the church, in the world outside, and we set people against us. We make mistakes and wrong choices because of self-will, and can find ourselves in grievous and complicated situations as a result. But failure with God is never final. Jesus Christ is the Redeemer of lost men and lost situations, whether the situation has been wrong for half a lifetime or only a day. And when he moves in to redeem, he not only forgives the sin we confess, but he also overrules for good the whole situation in which we've landed ourselves. And when he starts doing that sort of thing, he does it in style.
Wow.
And that's kind of the introduction. Yeah. And the reason I say this little book, because this little book I found fantastic. If you're a Christian who's lost their way, through your own self-will, it's not like something terrible happened to you.
You
mightn't be a victim. You just do it yourself. Mm-hmm. And you might be castigating yourself over it. You could be in dark place. It could be confusion.
Mm-hmm.
They say the dark night of the soul, when it's just you don't know where you're going, how to get out of it, how anything. I personally found that this little book was like somebody in the dark, in the middle of a dark ocean, throwing a little lifeline.
Wow.
And he talks about, Roy Hessian talks about Jesus being the sinner's God.
Explain that.
Well, it's like a lot of people, you know, if they've sinned, like any other God that you might think of, I mean, dream up one or any other religious God out there. You've sinned. It's not like somebody's done it to you. You've done it yourself. Like you could just dig a hole and go in out of shame.
Yeah.
But Jesus is the only one who's dealt with sin. He's the only one who's dealt already with it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's why Jesus is the sinner's God. Any sinner, a big sinner, a little sinner, can happily go to Jesus. So this book, what hope is there? Well, this book gives you hope. This book is one of the most encouraging little books.
Wow.
And the thing about it is just again, just because I know that time is limited, to read another little scrap about it. And this will give you a flavour of the sort of the encouragement that that you can get from reading this. This is Roy Hessian. Let me tell you loud and clear, you may expect a bright tomorrow. If you believe that, events will prove your faith in grace to have been amply justified. Our God is the God of the happy ending. He will do better to you than at your beginnings. Grace prophesies nothing but good ultimately for the man who knows how to lie at the feet of his nearest kinsman as the one who has been wrong. He cannot speak such good of the unbroken one who will not take that place. But let a man have but a measure of the broken and contrite heart, and God only speaks of the infinite good he intends to do for such a one. Wow. Encourage your heart then, dear tested one. With Jesus there is a happy ending. Yes, in this life, and much more so in the year of Jubilee, when we stand with Christ in glory, with everything culminated and every loss made good.
Wow, I love that. You know, and our God is the God of the happy endings. And you mentioned earlier out of that book, it says failure with God is never final.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because
That's right. Boy,
do we all go through moments of failure, and we have a voice in our ear from the enemy saying, telling us it's final, and telling us we'll never get back up on the horse again, and telling us a whole load of rubbish, you know. And I think for people who are listening, you know, just to encourage you, just to say, you know, this is wherever you're at, it's not final, you know, and there's a chance to come to the King, come to Jesus, and he is the one who and redemption you mentioned as well, Lisanne, you said it talks about forgiveness and restoration. Some people don't get beyond the forgiveness. Forgiveness is essential, we know that. We could spend another program on that, but restoration is another key thing, the way God builds back what's been destroyed and stolen and taken away and all that. So that gives me great encouragement. The Book of Ruth, it's a really classic book in the Bible itself, but this guidebook, this Our Nearest Kinsman, does sound fantastic. What we're going to do is we do have another book, and we'll give it a minute and see. This book is an epic, isn't it, Lisanne? This is called The Pilgrim's Progress, From This World to That Which Is to Come, by John Bunyan.
That's right. This used to be a very, very popular book among Christians. It's kind of fallen by the wayside. Mm-hmm. But to me, it deserves to be resurrected, you might say. But it's written by a guy called John.
It's getting resurrected on Near FM, so
yeah.
Here we go.
It was written by a guy called John Bunyan, who died in 1688. So we're going back in time again.
Mm-hmm.
However, this guy, this book was written while he was in prison. Now, he spent 12 years in jail because what happened was he was a Christian and he loved to preach the gospel. But what happened was there was, in 1593, there was an act called the Conventicle Act. And what that said was that it was illegal to have religious meetings of five or more people other than in the parish church. And so the punishment was 3 months imprisonment, but if you'd be allowed out if you promised that you wouldn't preach again. However, if you refused to promise to preach that you wouldn't preach again, you'd be banished or executed. So things were tough.
Goodness.
Yep. So these books are, or this one in particular, is born out. This is real stuff. Like, this isn't just some kind of, do you know what I mean? Like Black Mantilla in a dark place at the back of an old building, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. These are real serious matters. These are people who gave their lives for what they believed in. So, yeah. And out of that came this book, written in prison. This is John Bunyan. He spent 12 years in the jail, And his accusation was he was accused of having devilishly and perniciously abstained from coming to church to hear divine service. Oh, God love him. His wife had four stepchildren, one of whom was blind, and her husband, poor John Bunyan, in prison all those years, and she was helped by friends to survive, and also by him, because he used to make shoelaces in the jail, which got a few scraps of pennies here and there. Right. But anyway, the good news was that in 1672, the king kind of relented a bit and issued a declaration of indulgence, which it suspended the penal laws against non-conformists like that, who he was, one, whatever. But the reason I chose this book is because, I mean, it's such a good book all the way through in terms of practical Christian living. It covers virtually every That's circumstance. Right. But it's at the end of the book. I've never heard this read at a funeral, but I'm telling you, if this was a... And I'm not talking about non-Christians, because it's not promised to non-Christians.
Well, we'd normally at the end of the programme read a psalm, but what we're going to do this today is we're going to read this portion that you have here in lieu.
Okay. And if I've never heard, as I say, this, but this is Christian and his friend, and it's like they're going across the river and they're going to the other side. In other words, they're going to heaven. And there's trumpeters welcoming them. And so they walked on together. And as they walked ever and anon, these trumpeters, even with joyful sound, would, by mixing their music with looks and gestures, still signify to Christian and his brother how welcome they were into their company. Anyway, on it goes on. I have to cut this short. But anyhow, what happened was, it says, now they were come up to the gate. There was written over it in letters of gold, blessed are they that do his commandments, that they might have the right to the tree of life and may enter in through the gates. Then I saw in my dream that the shining men bid them call at the gate, the which they did. Some looked from above over the gate, to it Enoch, Moses, and Elijah, to whom it was said, these pilgrims are come from the city of destruction for the love that they bear to the king of this place. And then the pilgrims gave in unto them, each man his certificate. And the king, they're greeted by the king, who is King Jesus. Now I saw in my dream that these two men went in at the gate, and lo, as they entered, they were transfigured, and they had raiment put on that shone like gold. There was also that met them with harps and crowns, and gave to them the harps to praise and the crowns in token of honour. And they were, I can't even go on, but it goes on into raptures of joy about the hope that there is for a Christian when he does pass over.
Wonderful. Well, on that high note, we're going to say goodbye from God Talk 90.3 Near FM. You've been listening to God Talk. We're here every Monday at 5 o'clock or 5:30 a.m. on a Thursday morning. God bless you all, and thank you very much for listening.